Today on You Can With AI, we talk about whether enterprise adoption is stalling out, and if so, why? Welcome back to You Can With AI. I am Nathaniel Whittemore, host of the AI Daily Brief and partner with KPMG on You Can With AI. Ever since the beginning of AI, enterprises have been racing to catch up with an incredibly fast-moving technology. This year, however, the capability overhang, in other words, the space between what AI and agents are capable of and what we're actually getting out of them, has never been bigger. To unpack what's actually happening with enterprise adoption, I'm joined by two guests. Rasan Shears is a principal and USAIQ program lead at KPMG LLP, where she leads the firm's enterprise-wide AI transformation. Her work focuses on scaling AI adoption in ways that are practical, sustainable, and people-first. May Habib is the CEO and co-founder of Writer, the leading AI agent platform for the enterprise. Under her leadership, Writer has become a major force in enterprise AI, working with hundreds of leading organizations and earning recognition as a World Economic Forum unicorn, a Forbes AI 50 company, and a CNBC disruptor. All right, May, Rasan, welcome to You Can With AI. How's it going?
Great.
Awesome.
I'm very excited for this conversation. I think it's a particularly opportune moment. Believe it or not, somehow we're coming up towards the half of the year. I think 2026 has been pretty spectacular, fast-moving, and I think in some ways different than many of us would have thought as relates to AI. And I think you guys are in a unique position to dig into that. And where I want to start is with a question, actually. And I wonder if you would characterize, when we are discussing the adoption moment, right, the enterprise adoption moment in particular, is it fair to call it a stall right now? This is a term that I've seen thrown around, and I wanted to get your take on this. So, Rasan, maybe I'll start with you.
Yeah. I don't think it's a stall. I think it's an overload. There's so much new stuff coming out. There are many organizations and the humans that make up those organizations that just don't know where to start. It's like looking at a menu that has 1,000 items and saying, well, now I don't know what to do. But what I have seen is that when they get started on something that sparks their imagination, it takes over their imagination. But I do think there's a sense of overwhelm and overload.
May, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it certainly has not stalled out in terms of spend. If anything, I think we are actually seeing an acceleration of enterprise spend, but I think it reeks of desperation. This era's co-work is last year's ChatGPT Enterprise is the year before's Copilot, and none of it is working. And the stall out on ROI and actual impact, I would characterize as an autonomy gap. We've got a huge gulf between what the technology can do and what people are actually doing. And the reasons for that autonomy gap could probably fill your airwaves for the next 8 episodes. So I will let you know. I will let you direct where you want to take the conversation. But I would not say that there has been a stall out in terms of what the technology can do. We are only accelerating it. I wouldn't say there's a stall out in terms of enterprise attention and money on this, but we have certainly hit a ceiling in terms of our ability to rewire our organizations, and no number of LLM money funded deployment services firms is going to solve it.
This is a great clarification. So we're living inside what I and others have referred to as the capability overhang, right? It sounds like what you're saying is the capability overhang between what the technology can do and what it's actually doing inside these organizations, is at a challenging point, to put it mildly. How does that manifest inside organizations? Rasan, when you talk about overwhelm, May, when you talk about hitting the ceiling, what does that look like in practice?
I think for many of our clients, and when I think about us as an organization, it's the ability to refactor the process to actually take advantage of the capabilities that are out there, where there's this tension, which is very different than a stall. It's a time where you have to completely refactor. And many organizations don't have the agility naturally, either in their governance, their culture, their process, to be able to actually do that, to take advantage of the sea of capability that is out there. And so the real challenge, the real moment is being able to bring that together to unlock the potential. And that's where the ROI is going to start showing up in waves that are people are eager to get to. But this moment is about that tension between trying to do the old thing with the new capabilities when really what you need is a new thing.
And then that's why I love partnering with KPMG and you, Rasan. I mean, with the customer, right? It's that refactoring that customers tend to need a lot of help with. Because, Nathaniel, what you think about when folks are implementing AI is, yes, an idea that a lot of senior people get excited about and a strategy that gets sold in, but then the execution is delegated down multiple layers inside of the organization. And, you know, instead of people really taking advantage of the autonomous intelligent capabilities, right, people are making sure that May still has a job and she has a little agent that represents what she used to do. And I don't leave Rasan out. She's got a little agent. And so does Nathaniel, when really you want them to operate as if the entirety of the existing organization does not exist and start over. And nobody is doing that. Now, yeah. Rasan, what I love about working with KPMG with you guys as a customer is Lauren, your CMO, she is like hands on keyboard. She is hands on the wheel. She's in the guts of it, forcing the team to think about how you guys go to market differently and agentically. And you really need that like non-delegation of the transformation to get people to press as hard as they should, right, on how different the processes actually need to be.
That's really the leadership moment that's available across organizations. And you see that coming together in pockets. You also see it happening in smaller organizations where the leaders who have this vision of what's possible can create the cultural movement where there's psychological safety, there's a level of trust, you're able to pull the fear out and replace that with excitement. But in larger enterprises, that's really hard to get after. And I agree with you, Mae, when you get into that delegation, there's this friction that results because there's a perturbation factor that people conflict with what's possible in the future.
Yes. How can you incentivize people to go against the last 20 or 30 years of their career being oriented around a certain ladder, a certain set of roles and responsibilities, right? Like outcomes that are expected of them. They simply are not going to do it without rewiring the incentive structure. We have a AI Champions program for folks in our customer base that reach 1 billion tokens a month. And say what you will about token leaderboards for business users, like they work for getting people focused on that autonomy gap and really making as much of the leverage as they can. And we did an analysis of the titles, right? This is about a group that sits about a third in marketing, a third in sales and operations, and a third in finance, HR, CS, you name it. And 20% now have AI or agents in their title, right? So these are people who are either like with leadership or of their own volition, having manifested these roles to take on the AI rewiring of their teams. And I think it is very telling that like it is people who see a role for themselves in this AI transformation. And if you don't, if we've got to give AI titles to everybody to make that happen, we are in deep trouble. So like we do need leadership to step in here. But it just tells you how much of a virtuous cycle it is to go tell somebody your job is to not have your old job. That is your new job, right? We will figure out how you get paid and how you grow and how you keep increasing your comp based on that new thing later. But right now, I need you to go wire yourself out of a job. That's got to be the mandate.
Mae, the writer study from not this most recent one, but a couple years ago, which came out, I guess, in December of 24, it would have been, is one of my most quoted on the main show, on the AI Daily Brief. Specifically, it was the crispest that I'd seen around the gap between what leaders thought and what individuals thought. There was this seismic gap. I can't remember all the exact specifics, but it was things like 75% of leaders said their organization had a clear AI strategy compared to 45% for individuals or something like that. How has that changed over the last year? I know there's been a whole additional survey plus another year and a half now of experience with these customers. And B, it almost sounds like one of the changes is this particular type of empowerment and redesign of certain key leaders. rather than just empowering people, empowering them on a whole different level. But I guess maybe to move back to the sort of broader question, has that changed and how has that changed over the last year?
Yeah. The actual executives now, three quarters of them are telling us, yeah, our strategy is for show, right? AI theater is a thing and executives are realizing it. From an end user perspective, like there is a small and growing portion of them that has become the AI elite, right? And they are themselves five times more productive and three times more likely to get a promotion in 2025. And so, yes, there absolutely is now a growing realization of what the end users knew, realized 2 years ago, that we actually don't have a strategy, right? And like execs now are calling it. It's not really working. It's for theater, innovation theater. But there is a group now of end users that has been able to accelerate their careers by being the AI experts in the company. And I think next survey, we are going to see a growing friction between those AI-pilled employees and everybody else. And a huge part of what makes them successful is they have figured out how to get trustworthy, scalable results, right? And I think a lot of what I see an executive not getting right when they use Claude Code on a weekend or have set up an OpenClaw server is the fact that the rest of their organization lives and dies by the details. Something you think is good would get you fired if you actually sent it to your manager, right? And the level of precision and specificity and consistency that's actually required to do something as straightforward as a AI-generated prep doc for your CEO, right? You cannot get a detail wrong. How do you change the process if the thing is still riddled with errors and you can't actually scale it? And so we at Writer build a whole platform, right, of product to get this right. The AI quality harness that the business user uses, the AI security harness that IT uses to govern these agents. And if you don't get that recipe right, it is very hard to build things that can scale, build things that are good, and really heal so many of these frictions in organizations that are quickly calcifying into dysfunction around AI, right? The number of times someone has told me, no, don't go talk to my peer about this because I don't want them to know that I'm doing X because they've got their own pet project. It's like, we really need alignment. And that is the scarce thing right now. People are rushing to jump on the next hype train. And anyone who does not want to do that feels like they need to like protect the real thing from the next shiny object syndrome. And I don't know how it ends, but I have never seen this. I've been in NLP and machine learning for more than a decade. We've been running Writer for 5 years. The last 3 months are utter insanity. Just utter insanity is the only way I can describe it.
Yeah, I agree. And the leaders are moving away. I mean, there was a time where I would have said, listen, there is still a moment for you to get into this and for you to be one of the leaders. But the leaders have moved away from the front of the pack. And it is shining a very bright light on the theater strategy versus actual strategy and where that can actually manifest into benefit for your shareholders, for your employees, for the market, for your brand. And it requires this metamorphosis of things. So you talked about the level of precision required to scale across the enterprise. It's very different than your pet project at home where you're learning your new skills.
Yeah.
You have to understand how to get to that in order to make the difference, in order to be a leader and move away from the pack. And I would say that it is those organizations where there are enough bright spots that they're learning from and perfecting that are making the difference and are moving the needle.
So you guys are both in different ways talking about a new moment that requires a whole different infrastructure. And I guess one of my questions to stay on the leader train for a while is, I think sophisticated thinkers have from the beginning understood that AI wasn't going to be a question of dumping the latest tool on someone's head and hoping it worked. I think some people got pretty early that it was going to require organization level change, right? Organizational change, not just technology change. Do you see that? And Rasan, I'll throw it to you first. Do you see a broader recognition that the job of AI transformation is actually whole org transformation? Or is that still something that people are missing? Is still something that they're hoping that just with the right tools and the right, whatever, learning program on top of those tools, that'll be sufficient?
I think you see the realization of that fact aligned with their maturity in their organization in terms of where they are. So the leaders see it, get it, and you see them making shifts accordingly, either in empowering leaders at different levels of the organization to do that. It's in changing even their role structure, their compensation structure, definition of success, and being willing to early and blatantly acknowledge that they want progress and not perfection, because this is the moment where progress is so important. Versus others who are still trapped in a lot of the pilots and trying to really maximize any new shiny tool inside of their existing framework. And so those organizations, which does account for a lot, and we see that in our survey results, are like, that's the group that needs to break through. And we're seeing more and more clients ask us and say, you know, we got this wrong. We can't go at this as a function, as a group. This is really something that we have to tackle across the enterprise, which is scary for many organizations, particularly the big ones, because those things fail a lot. And so it's the kind of thing they have avoided. But this requires you to embrace at that level.
The cross-functional. Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with that. Because so many of the big use case transformations cut across multiple groups, right? Even something as simple as I am changing the way we welcome customers into our hotel, right? I've got three or four internal systems owned by another group that my writer agents now need to touch. They haven't been at the table. I need to go make them first parties to this transformation. So it is definitely the kind of very innocuous request that bumps up against, do I really have a robust cross-functional AI strategy that all my leaders have signed on to? Because like, how do you know IT will prioritize that request, right? Or the mm-hmm. internal tooling team knows how to connect to MCP servers, right? And so that alignment against real business priorities and the way AI serves those priorities is the bedrock that everything else is built on, and that the speed and acceleration of the fact, the people who are breaking away, people who are breaking away from the pack, they've established that already.
You know, it's interesting. Earlier, May, you were talking about how the sophisticated approach is to literally ask people to redesign what they do, to throw out, start from zero, start from first principles, and build from there. And even though that is an individual focused request, if you don't have organizational alignment, you're effectively or implicitly saying, but do that redesign within the same boundaries that you've always had, right? Which just may not end up how it works. How have agents changed all of this? This is the year, I think, pretty conclusively that agents became real, even though we've been talking about them for 2 years. And there was a lot of enterprises saying last year that they had agents deployed. We're in a different moment now. How have you seen that change things?
Yeah, I mean, it's so exciting. We've got a regional bank in EMEA that has 5x'd the number of meetings that are set for their in-branch bankers by autonomous agents that are going out into the community and setting up these in-person interactions. Right? Agents that are able to actually be in that conversation, right? Listening, helping send things to the internal systems from the conversation, helping with the follow-up, helping with the always-on marketing that can follow a interaction like that. And so we absolutely have got real agents working and scaling. But the difference is where it has worked and scaled, Nathaniel, there was nothing before. That's the reality. Very few people are succeeding at taking existing table stake stuff and agentifying it. We are having much more success saying, all right, I am a 150-year-old financial institution, and gosh, I cannot get away from my waterfall go-to-market and this massive baggage of tooling and marketing automation and prospect scoring, but I've got a new product launching and I do not want to go use that stack or those processes or any of those teams. I am going to stand up a SWAT team to figure this out agentically, the creative, the compliance, the omni-channel. Okay. And when we succeed and scale that, suddenly you're bringing people along, not to something theoretical, but to a scaled, working agentic reality. And I think that is going to be the way. It is not bringing in a huge effort to rewire people's existing roles and responsibilities. There's just too much human HR work for this to work. I really think it is the standing up the SWAT team that is done with a lot of intention, a lot of positivity that helps inspire everybody else to do things differently, because it's just not going fast enough the other way.
Yeah, I think it's that building almost on the edge, showing what's possible
as
a way of galvanizing the rest of the organization toward the future. My experience has been in conversations with clients all over in every industry is they have a really hard time when they can't see it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Being able to believe it's possible to understand where they're going beyond the theory and doing this innovation at the edge and demonstrating that is a very real way to bring the entire organization along and to showcase to leaders that this transformation unlocks the potential that they've heard about and that's in the hype, but they can really see it. Even if it's a smaller scale, they can see that come to fruition.
Yeah.
So you guys have started to map out basically what good organizations, what leading organizations versus laggard organizations are doing. I've heard, one, they're taking an organization level view of this, right? It's not just individual pockets, they're thinking across the org. I've heard they're thinking in big sort of ground up, start from zero type of terms, and particularly looking at some of these blue space, blue oceans kind of opportunities as the starting point. What are other characteristics that you're starting to see that are common among organizations that you would put in that leader category when it comes to the change?
I think their risk appetite is opening, not in terms of safeguarding their core, but in terms of where they're willing to experiment and prove out what's possible. And so I see a shift in that risk appetite that's allowing them to take these first steps. May gave a great example. The risk appetite there was in going after something they hadn't been able to access or touch before. So they didn't put their core base, their core customers, existing customers at risk. They went for new. And so that was an expansion of the risk appetite, an expansion of how they consider brand. But it was an intentional decision, likely by the leaders there, to be able to take that first step. And so that shift in risk appetite to be able to take that first step, I think is a key thing you have to hear and see that the leaders are willing to embrace.
May, what about you? What are common, if any, common characteristics that you're seeing across leading organizations?
There is a real emphasis on equipping yourself, right? I love doing one-on-one sessions with leaders because when their direct reports see them using agents, right? When they suddenly get a proactive ping in Teams, right? And they're like, oh, sent by writer agent, right? If in one-on-ones, they're getting shown what their leader is building, right? Like that sets a tone. And it's that C minus one, not being too busy, right? That makes everybody else get hands-on. And the best organizations are doing all the things, right? It's AI literacy for everybody. It's execs that are hands-on. It's a strategy being united across the company. It's people whose job it is full-time to be AI, who sit in the business, not IT, right? And it's people really in a hands-on way experiencing the leverage for themselves. And it's folks who aren't doing it to cut jobs, right? We just had Coinbase, yet another, like, I am cutting jobs to be more AI efficient. And that may be true, but in the enterprise, folks have got a lot to build, a lot of growth opportunities, a lot of products to build. And you just will scare people into inaction, right? If you do not make it about growth. And I think the best organizations are really making AI adoption about growth, career growth, personal growth. Yeah.
It's that with them. And I will say, like for us, it's awareness, access, and adoption. A part of that awareness is why this is our moment, why this matters to us, right? Access, you have the latest things so that you can actually get after the ideas. And then adoption is very much leaders leading from the front and showing that commitment, demonstrating it's the value of this new way of thinking and new way of working. And then challenging every level in the organization, especially for big ones, so that as that message cascades, it doesn't lose its efficacy and its impact. Because you said it so correctly, May, it is a cultural shift in humans want to follow their leader's footsteps. They want to emulate that behavior. Leaders have to showcase it. And while people are cutting, I can say there's lots of reasons people are doing that that have nothing to do with AI. What remains true is necessity and scarcity of resources will make you innovative to get something accomplished. And so it is, in many cases, used as a forcing mechanism to drive the behavior. But without a doubt, lasting change comes when someone can see the value in it for themselves, and that is amplified for the organization.
It's interesting. So to go back again to this, as people are sitting there jotting notes about what a strong organization looks like, the thing that I'll add from that is an alignment of this being a growth opportunity for both the organization and the individual, which is not language that I think most people use when they're talking about AI. In fact, I think that the conversation about how it could be good for an individual tends to be pretty divorced from how it can be good for an organization. And it sounds like you guys are starting to see the leading organizations are actually bringing those two strands together.
I have a client, we were having a very engrossed conversation about how he was trying to advance the AI fluency of his team. And what he was doing was encouraging people to solve their biggest personal problem outside of work to spark this innovation and showing them that it's creating value for them. And then that bleeds over into how they think they can create value for the organization. He had them start with solving the problem for them.
Over the next 6 months, we're coming up on, like I said at the beginning, the sort of second half of this year. What do you think is going to be, on average, the biggest challenge or one big challenge for organizations? And what do you think is the most interesting or exciting opportunity? May, we'll start with you.
I am really excited about AI acting much more like a teammate than a bot. And we are there from the ability to reason. Right? We are not there from the ability to connect and maintain context. And a lot of that is product, right? We built a platform for helping customers manage that IP that is their existing context, plus the context the agents create, and being able to manage that and control it. But it's also the form factors, right? Am I talking to my teammate on the phone? Am I talking to them on Teams? Am I emailing them? Are they emailing me? It's going to be a very exciting next few quarters as the agent leaves the chatbot.
I couldn't agree more. That level of interaction is going to make capability even more approachable for people. And I think that will start to break down a barrier. I would tell you the other pieces, particularly in large enterprises, having the agents have access to a broad swath of data because some of the core capabilities of technology is working in an interwoven fashion where my agent can look and see all the things my human teammates can do. And so we're having deeper conversations over a sustained period of time to be able to get work done. I think it's going to be a difference maker. I know, May and Ryder, you've done a lot about creating that connectivity to the data that's necessary to get after work in a different way. Everyone doesn't have that capability in their hands yet. And so their experiences can be quite episodic and choppy. But in the next weeks, that is available to be solved. Let's just say it that way.
Yes,
is one.
Exactly.
And then I think the second thing is we're going to see capabilities like what Ryder has and other players in the market have. They are coming for the stuff that people have built in these pilots, and people are going to have to get ready to give up on the thing that they tried to create and embrace what's out there and what's new. And it's going to shift dramatically what they've been able to do in their organizations and how they're able to engage.
Rasan, I call it creative destruction, right? We've built a whole company that is constantly creatively destroying what we and our customers have built to be replaced with something bigger, better, more intelligent. Again, the organizations that have broken away from the gap, from the pack, do not have that sunk cost fallacy. They know that the learning and the context and the experience is incredibly valuable. And writing code is literally free now, right? The marginal cost is near zero. and much more important for folks to understand what the new process should be and have that alignment. The way or the how that you build it is just going to be in constant flux.
I think it's an incredibly exciting time, and I really appreciate both of you guys spending some time today to share your perspective on this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Travis.
Yeah.